Gary, you're so badly retro. Even your musical taste, it's old man's rock. Gaslight Anthem, Springsteen, Dylan. You need to get modern with your taste.
The times they are changing.
Well, at least Dylan is quotable, if not singable in your case. And these are definitely changing times for tennis, as the next gen is becoming the now gen.
And as I always say, you don't need a weatherman to know which way the wind blows.
To quote right back at you, some people feel the rain, others just get wet. But really, the last gen, i.e. Federer, Djokovic, Nadal, Murray, they're at the crossroads watching the imminent arrival of this new group of players.
And some people seem to fade away, but when they're truly gone, it's like they didn't fade away at all.
Okay, Mr. Dylan Rent-A-Quote, you need to start thinking for yourself.
But all I can be is me, whoever that is.
I fear we find out. And my apologies to Bob Dylan's lyrics are heartfelt.
I don't believe you. You're a liar.
Stop. Stop it now.
I'll let you be my dream if I can be in yours. Yeah, that's
enough, 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 enough. Drop Shot, Chapter 6, The Changing of the Guard.
I feel like I want to quote more Bob Dylan, but I think we might be pushing that joke to the edge.
Was it a joke? I don't know. I didn't find any of it funny.
Oh, were you just putting me down?
Yeah, of course.
A bit vindictive.
Well, you know, we've been doing this a while now. I've got to know you.
Maybe. So, The Changing of the Guard, which is a Bob Dylan song on the Street Legal album, but we're not talking about that.
Oh, you're such a Bob spotter.
Oh, a Bobhead, as we're called.
Is that what you're called? Yeah. I think we'll just call you Bobby.
So, Denis Shapovalov. Now, this episode is all about the players that who weren't in Milan, who are obviously the next gen, but they weren't branded as the next gen last November. Now, he was meant to be in Milan, but he pulled out, so he didn't compete. But we didn't want to not talk about him. And fortunately, we've met him previously, a couple of years ago when he was at Queens, when people knew about him already because he'd had that unfortunate incident in the Davis Cup where he'd hit the ball that hit the umpire, which is a complete accident, but an amazing shot. But he sort of announced himself to a UK audience, at least, by beating Kyle Edmund pretty convincingly as well at Queens. And then, you know, he competed well in that week. And he was just an interesting guy. He's got that big serve. He's got the weird serve technique where he bounces the ball through his legs. And that was the first time I'd seen him play properly. And I was just really impressed.
In fact, you were so impressed with that serve. All you said to me was when I said, oh, Shapovalov is at this tournament I'm at. And you just said, just watch the way he serves. And it is quite extraordinary because, you know, I know it's not talking about his talent in so many ways, but in other ways it is, because you're going to look such a fool if you get that wrong, aren't you? Because that's just going to go bouncing down the centre line.
Yeah, it's like a footballer that will do a Panenka on a penalty and the best players pull it off. And just recently in MLS, there was a player for Vancouver Whitecaps that tried to do it against LA Galaxy, and the week before Zlatan had done it and just done it amazingly, and then he tries to do it and he hit it so badly the keeper had time to dive to the left and get up and still save it, and it was just embarrassing. And so when you see Shapovalov doing that technique, it is just a little gimmick, but the fact he's got the confidence to do it, and it's a little bit of skill, I guess, but I like players with that little bit of
flair
about him. Yeah, he's a guy who likes to play his tennis that way, and I enjoyed watching him.
Well, and also interestingly, he does it every serve, so actually it's part of his routine. It's no longer a flash thing he does. It is part of his whole process, so that shows the kind of character we're dealing with.
It does. And we spoke to him, he wasn't Drop Shot related at the time, but because we didn't have the opportunity to speak with him in Milan, we're just gonna run the interview now from 2017 when we met him at Queens, and he'd just beaten Edmund, and we'd put the request in to do the interview, and we didn't think it was going to happen, and then suddenly we got the call and we went upstairs and he was with his coach warming down in the gym, and he was on an exercise bike while I was doing the interview. So you'll hear some, maybe a little bit of heavy breathing, probably from me because I walked up the stairs, not from him, and he's on a bike. But
do you think you could do an interview if somebody talked to you on an exercise bike?
You would be struggling to get me on the bike.
Okay, so there's a no then.
But here's that interview with Denis, which gives some insight into his background and where he's from, and you know, his family, and where that serve routine came from.
Hello, first things first, you've got an unusual technique before you serve when you're bouncing it through your legs. What's that all about?
Well, personally, I think John Isner stole that from me. I swear I did it all my life, and then at one point I kind of looked at John. I was like, hey, wait a minute, he's doing my move. So, but I don't know. Growing up, I kind of just wanted to be a little bit cool, a little bit flashy, doing something different before I served. And from then, it just became a routine of mine. It's not something I think about. It's just natural for me.
So where did it come from? Why through the legs? Why not anything else?
Well, I was pretty bad at bouncing the ball on my racket, so so I had to choose something that looks pretty cool, and it's easy to do. No, I don't know. I mean, it's tough to say why I chose it. It just felt natural, felt cool at the time.
You're only 18. There's not a lot out there about you across the internet and all the rest of it. So tell us a little bit about your background and how you got into tennis.
Yeah, born in Tel Aviv in Israel. Moved to Canada when I was 9 months. My mother's a past tennis player, was around 300 in the world, so she played pretty well professionally. My dad was a volleyball player, played for college. Beginning tennis, I mean, my brother's 3 years older, and he started with my mom. He started working with her, and then, I always looked up to my brother. I always wanted to be like him, so I saw him on the court, and obviously I wanted to go as well, and she started working with me when I was 5 years old. And she, honestly, she's been helping me ever since. We stopped working one-on-one at about 13. She still helps me out a lot. She still, when Marty can't travel, she comes with me and she coaches me. And when I'm at home, she always coaches me. And about when I was 13 or 14, she actually opened up her own little tennis club for me to train at. At the time, I wasn't with the Federation, so I needed a place to train. So she opened up, it's like an industrial building with two courts and a mini court, and she still runs programs from there. But she basically got me into tennis, and very thankful for her.
But where's that club and what's it called?
It's called Tessa Tennis after her name. It's 15 minutes away from where they play the Rogers Cup. It's on Langstaff and Dufferin in Toronto. Very similar course to Rexall, the same people that made the Rexall, or the Aviva, now it's called the Aviva courts, made those courts. So
are you into any other sports apart from tennis?
Yeah, I'm a huge hockey fan. Always wanted to play, but by the time I really got into hockey, I was a little bit too old, and I didn't really want to get hurt playing it, so I stuck to tennis. Yeah. I'm not a huge soccer guy. I love the sport. I used to play soccer a little bit, just for fun. But to be honest, the thing I don't like about soccer is all the fake falling. it's completely opposite from hockey, you know. In hockey, like, you have to act tough. But, in soccer, there's so many delays of games at the end, you know, when one team's up. And that kind of bothers me. But I really enjoy watching it. But I never really got into it too much, you know, with teams and players.
And just looking at your life away from the court, what music are you into, and what does Dennis get up to when he's not playing tennis?
I like a variety of songs, genres of music, but mainly probably rap. I really love Eminem, just because, you know, he's so inspiring, to be honest. You know, he grew up in such a tough neighborhood, and he had such a tough life, and what he's come from and where he's gone to, you know, starting off in such a terrible place, it's honestly really inspiring. And I hope to honestly be like him, except minus the tattoos and the swearing and stuff.
What's it like being an 18-year-old and traveling so much? It must be difficult.
Yeah, this year, honestly, it hit me quite a bit. It's my first full year as a pro, so it's been difficult, but I've gotten pretty used to it, and obviously it helps when you have good results. You kind of get motivated. But I think my coach over there, Marty, I started with him this year, and he's really helped me with that. And, just dealing with all the travels and stuff, he's really helped me focus more on my game rather than, you know, not being able to see my friends and seeing my family.
So from Denis Shapovalov, or Denis Shapovalov, however they want to pronounce it, because...
Or Shapovalov.
Manamana. to Alexander Zverev.
Well, that's quite a leap. But Zverev's a really interesting character because he qualified for Next Gen Finals, I guess, within about a minute of the year starting, and was never going to be at Milan, was he? Because he got himself into the Masters Final. But he's a really interesting character. For a man who's become so successful, so young, and still able to play in Next Gen Finals and what have you, there's almost a criticism about him that, oh, he hasn't won a major yet. Oh, is he going to flop? And this guy's young. You know, he needs time. And he's still up against the big four. But he's one of the closest, isn't he?
Do you find that criticism of him is interesting because it comes from outside of tennis, that when you hear the players talk about him, there's mutual respect for him. They see him as a challenger, a good player, a talented player, a player that's got, you know, a bright future ahead of him. But it seems to be the criticism comes from the press and it comes from the fans who maybe aren't ready to give up Federer and Djokovic just yet.
Yeah, and I find that incredibly sad because all sport is cyclical. It evolves, players come, players go, whatever the sport is. And yes, of course, we want to hold on to icons and fantastic players. But at some point, you have to let them go. And you have to be really willing to support the people that are coming through. And for me, Zverev, you watch him. Okay, sometimes his game doesn't work. And sometimes he looks as though he's not quite got it going on a day, but it really doesn't matter. I mean, the guy's got everything in his locker, and I can't wait to see him be up there and win his first major title.
And I bring that point up because we were in Milan for the Next Gen Finals, and then literally we fly back on a Saturday, and then come the Monday we're at the O2 for the ATP Finals. And then it was in the semi-final that he beat Federer and he got booed off. And it was all because a ball boy had dropped a ball during a rally and he stopped, and then it sort of got in the way of Federer, and the fans didn't really like the way that he had gone about winning the game. But the fans booed him, and there was a little bit of negativity in the press. But then when you heard the players speak about it after that game, after that match, in the way that Federer did, there was no animosity, and it was sort of just dealt with in terms of these things happen and they didn't want to, you know, really target him. And I thought Federer was kind in the way that he did that, because he could have been upset and angry with him and sort of fueled that hatred that was coming at him at that moment from the crowd, or what he would, the criticism he would get in the press. But he didn't.
You're quite right. And we've seen the opposite side of that when players on the end of strange decisions put the pressure back on their opponent. And I thought Federer handled himself well in that respect.
And here's what he had to say.
It's just unfortunate circumstances. You know, these things happen. Booing, I never like it. We see it in other sports all the time. In tennis, it's rare. So when it happens, it's we feel it, you know, really gets very personal, and we take it very direct, you know. And I think it's unfortunate that this happened. Sasha doesn't deserve it, you know. He apologized to me at the net. I was like, buddy, shut up. You know, you don't need to apologize to me here. Congratulations on the great match and a great tournament so far. And all the best for the finals. And, you know, you move on. And he shouldn't be apologizing, because what's his, he didn't do anything about it. He just called it how it was, and he felt it affected play. And there is a rule that if something like this happens, that you replay points. So, should the umpire have explained this case more in that very moment? I mean, rules are rules. Replay the point. You know, everybody deal with it. You know, I did. So we move on. But yeah, you don't like to see it, but look, it happens. And I'm sure he won't be booed coming out for the finals, or at least I hope so. I mean, it's not his mistake.
So Federer was very diplomatic in that instance. But going into the final of the ATP finals, when he played Djokovic, nobody was still expecting Zverev to win that, because Djokovic had beaten him comfortably as well earlier on in that week. But then it was just really interesting that Djokovic loses to Zverev, and he loses pretty comfortably as well. It was sort of like a reverse of the game that both had had earlier on that week. And he was so complimentary of Zverev as well.
Yeah, well, again, it takes us back to the point you were making, that the players know what Zverev is capable of. They know how good he's going to be. He's still at the very, very start of his career. And he is the, you know, the supreme young player at this moment in time, and obviously gets respect from people within the tennis world. The outside world, for whatever reason, and they hate, as we said, they hate giving up their icons. Everybody who's got to the top of the game, and I find this really interesting about tennis, is that there is such huge love for the people who stay and stay and stay at the top of the game, and people don't like to see change. I find that extraordinary. The supporters will say, I'm a Federer person, I want him to stay till he's 49 or whatever. And for me, I love seeing somebody come along and go, you know what, I'm going to try and take your crown off you.
And it's interesting you say that, because Djokovic, one of the most successful players ever in the sport, is almost championing that as well, as he said.
You know, there's a lot of similarities in terms of trajectory of professional tennis and, you know, in our careers. So hopefully he can surpass me. I mean, I sincerely wish him that. He, you know, seems like someone that... That is very dedicated, and without a doubt, he's a really nice person, and someone that gets along very well with everyone, and he deserves everything he gets so far. And you know, there's a lot of time ahead of him, so I wish him to stay healthy and obviously win a lot of titles.
That was Novak Djokovic there talking about hoping that Zverev, not him particularly, but just the players in general as well, will go on to achieve something beyond what the current generation have. Because I think if they do, whether it's Zverev and Tsitsipas and Demonauer, or there's another top four, that it's important for the sport, because it means that there's icons being reproduced again. Because tennis is such an individual sport that if you compare it to football, for instance, there's the one constant in football is that players come and go, but clubs remain. Whereas in tennis, players come for 10 years and they're gone, and there's no club there supporting them, because it is about the individual. So tennis needs this next generation of players.
I also think what's interesting is, and we're seeing this in the women's game as well, that you're getting a lot of younger players coming through, and they're sharing around the major titles. There's not just one person winning. And that's made it really exciting to watch. And I think we're going to see the same thing happen in the men's game. Yeah, Zverev may win two titles in the next 2 years or whatever, but so may Tsitsipas and so may Demonauer. And there's a group of players. I think the titles will get shared around. I think that can only make for more exciting tennis.
Now, earlier on in our series of Drop Shot, in Chapter 3, we spoke to Roz Sattar from BritWatch, and she said something very similar about the players, that people see it as a weakness that in the women's game, the Grand Slams are being shared around, and she's predicting that it's going to happen just like you in the men's game. She didn't say this in Chapter 3, but this is a part of the interview that we didn't run at the time, which we'll run now.
I mean, we've seen it in the women's game that, you know, as Serena was absent for like a year and a half, the top of the tree sort of chopped and changed, and we saw different slam winners. And people say that that's weak, but it's not weak. You've actually got people beginning to forge their path and actually start to set themselves apart as the best in the women's game. So I actually think that's what we're going to see in the men's game in the next 5 years or so. I think if anybody's going to beat Federer's 20, it's going to be Djokovic, and then that is going to stay as the hallmark for a long time. But I do see the top and the slams racking up for the likes of Thiem and Zverev, and then maybe a couple of years down the line, the Tsitsipases of this world, maybe Demonaur. He impresses me a lot. He's got a great work ethic, and he's like a little terrier that's snapping at your heels. So maybe we haven't seen much of him yet, but I definitely think that Tsitsipas, Thiem and Zverev are my ones to watch.
There we go. Great minds think alike, Gary.
Maybe not.
What?
Well, I like what Roz had to say.
But hold on. I think I said something pretty similar.
Yeah. I think you heard her audio.
I didn't, actually. It's quite funny when you get these moments, but, you know, you listen to us, Gary, and you'll learn something about this game.
Perhaps. But just sticking with Zverev as well, that we talk about what happened with him in London at the O2 at the ATP Finals with Federer. what I found really fascinating with him was the mentality of the player. That, like Federer said earlier, booing isn't something that happens in tennis. It happens so rarely. So it does have an impact on the players. Yeah, he was able to pull himself together, go out in the same arena, and then have this dominant display against Djokovic. And I was really impressed with that. And just seeing a young kid come out and do that, playing with not so much the weight of the world on his shoulders, because I guess it was more for Djokovic to lose in that final than it was for Zverev. But to have everything happen and then turn it around 180 so that the crowd were against him one day and then suddenly they're with him because they're respecting what he actually just did on court. That's really impressive.
Yeah, but also don't forget, crowds change every day. It's very rare it's the same people in. I think he just got a bad crowd that first day. But yeah, you still have to win them over. And, you know, I've seen this in places like Monaco, the Monte Carlo Masters. And they're a very interesting crowd because if they don't like something, they let the players know. So I don't totally believe this idea that tennis crowds are just nicely well-behaved, good people. I've seen them have some reactions.
But it's nothing like it is in football or rugby or another sport where they're not used to it as much. There might be, I think what happens in tennis is that the crowd will tend to lend their support to one player more rather than putting pressure on the other. And that's sort of a different dynamic in itself anyway. But the booing, I thought, was over the top.
Oh, it's contemptible.
Yeah, and to see a young player bounce back from that in the way that he did was impressive. And Zverev's whole outlook was good throughout that entire week.
Yeah, without a doubt. And as you say, the key thing to all of that was getting through those moments, but also to step out onto court against Djokovic, who'd basically hammered him in the round robin phase, and to start from scratch and go, different game, different day, I'm going to be different. And he was, and he won.
And before we move on from Zverev, we just want to hear from him, and this is what he had to say.
I didn't know what to expect, to be honest, because yesterday I felt like I've done, you know, everything right, to be honest, by the rules and by how it should have been. But the crowd reactions wasn't too good to me, and I was a little bit sad because us as tennis players, we take it very personal and this kind of stuff because it's one-on-one sport. So we take everything more personal than in other sports. You know, and today the mindset, I just wanted to enjoy being out there. I just wanted to enjoy playing and competing against the best player in the world. And, you know, the trophy was very happy, but I was happy to lift it up. It's great. But, you know, the future, we still got multiple years for all of us ahead. And a lot of things can happen and a lot of things can change. And I'll do everything I can to be on top. But, you know, the other guys are playing great tennis as well.
Now, throughout this series of Drop Shot, Kerry, we've spoken about specific players, and there are plenty of players coming through outside of the top four right now, you know, and the traditional powers that we've seen in the last 10 years. So to reel a few of them off, you've got Dominic Thiem, you've got Nick Kyrgios, a player who we both like a lot, but seems to be forgotten about, that people don't talk about him being a player who could potentially do something. He's like the bad boy of tennis, but he's only 23.
Yeah, I mean, he is. He's one of those guys. He seems to be around a lot longer than he actually has, maybe because he's drawn attention to himself. Personally, I love him as a character. I love...
Remember at Queen's when he put that journalist in his place? It was hilarious. But he did it in such a fun way that he wasn't having a go at the journalist. He was sort of just correcting him. Why don't you just explain the background to that?
Oh, that was hysterical because we'd watched Andy Murray warming up. And on the court next to him, Kyrgios was warming up as well.
And they were playing each other.
Yeah, exactly. Were they playing?
They were playing each other later on that week.
Oh, yeah, but they weren't. They were on separate practice courts. Yeah. And there was some dialogue going on between them. And later on in the press conference after Kyrgios had played, he was asked, oh, what was that with Andy Murray? It looked as though things were a bit strained between you. And this journo was trying to put pressure on and create some sort of incident. And Kyrgios just went, oh, mate, you got it all wrong. He's my mate. You know, he's my mate, Andy. You know, oh, you're having a shocker. And the journo kept going. And Kyrgios just
corrected him on everything. And that, look, it was a joke between friends. Don't worry about it.
And just kept going, oh, you've had a shocker, mate. An absolute nightmare. real shocker. And this journo just shrunk into his seat. It was brilliant. I loved watching that.
I've been there and I've done the same.
What, been an idiot?
Misinterpreted a situation and asked a question and been embarrassed in front of many different people.
Really? Oh, I'd love to know some of your most embarrassing moments.
Well, this story's got nothing to do with football. It's got nothing to do with tennis, but it was football. And it was Chelsea against Liverpool. And Liverpool just won against Chelsea at Stamford Bridge in 2016-17, Conte's first season. And Fabregas was on the bench. And the last question I got to Klopp, and I just said, oh, Jurgen, when you saw Fabregas on the bench, did it mean that tactically you knew you had the upper hand on Chelsea today? And I never knew this, but Klopp refuses to answer questions about other teams and tactics. So then he stood up and went, great question to end the press conference. Bye. And walked off. And if you go on YouTube, you can find it. And everyone's commenting and going, who is this journalist? And da, 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 da. So I was just sat there in my chair, like everyone looking at me thinking, we had Klopp here. He's happy and you just annoyed him. And now he's gone off. And I was really red-faced.
Oh, that's so embarrassing. I love it. Maybe we'll get more tales later.
Maybe, but back to the tennis. So we've got Kyrgios, as we mentioned, but then there's plenty of other players, Karen Khachanov, Daniel Medvedev, your Canadian friend that you saw in Monaco last year.
Felix Auger Aliassime.
And then we've got Britain's very own Carl Edmund. So the reason we're reading these names off is just to acknowledge these players because we don't want to go into the ins and outs of every single one. But at this stage, I think it's interesting to get the views from some of the journalists that we've spoken to throughout this first series of Drop Shot, because we can talk about the players and how they play tennis, but equally we understand that tennis is a sport that relies on these players to be personalities.
I guess also the modern player isn't just a player. They're also iconic for the fans. They have to deliver things in a certain way. They have to use social media like Tsitsipas does. And I think Maylene Ramey agrees with us.
I think if you're a person that enjoys social media and you have a naturally open personality and you like connecting with fans, that's definitely going to help you in the sport. It's going to help you as a player, and it's also going to help the sport overall. I think it's so important nowadays in any sport to draw a fan into the sport. You really are drawn in sometimes by the sport, but oftentimes it's because you like a player or you can relate with that player. And it may not even be the best player. It doesn't have to be a Roger and Rafa to really engage you and to bring you into the sport. So if a young player can watch Stefanos' video on YouTube because they were just on YouTube watching videos and they weren't even a tennis fan and they saw this cool travel vlog pop up and it happens to be a tennis player, great, now they're also a tennis fan. So that can happen across the board on all platforms, and I think that's just going to help the sport more and more.
A theme of this first series of Drop Shot, you've spoken about the next gen, we've spoken about the next gen, but then you tried to coin the term, they're not actually the next gen, they're the now gen. And you said it in our very first interview, which is in episode one with Lloyd Harris. We pull him off the practice court and we're talking to him, and you say, oh, they've changed the slogan to the future is now. And when we were speaking to Maritza Georgitsis, who is a family friend of the Tsitsipas family, she agreed with you.
It's like the thing you said before when we were talking, that it's not the next gen. You said it's the gen of today, because we have, let's say, Zverev, who was the first one to qualify, and it's the second year that he's going to play the ATP final. So I think all these guys playing in the next gen, they're not the next gen, they're the generation of today. It's amazing, and it's a good thing for tennis.
Among all the people that we spoke to throughout this series, Ross Hutchins is a former player. He didn't scale the same heights as these players now that are part of the next gen, but he's the tournament director of the next gen in Milan. And we've heard from him in terms of what he thinks of certain players, but he had some interesting things to say about tennis as a wider sport now and what we're seeing as that older generation, as we keep calling them, as they're on their way out and they are being replaced.
I think it's very interesting what he had to say, especially from the point of view of having been a player and having tried to achieve certain things, which, as he said, he wasn't able to. He gave us some real insight into the whole process of being a young, talented player.
On a player side, I think it's very interesting. I think the sport-wide, it's very interesting with what's happening at the moment. With generally, there's so much interest in the sport across the board, whether it is with rule changes, with how it's being consumed through the media world, with the interest throughout the calendar of the ATP World Tour events, that there's such strong following, with the younger generation, as you say, winning the biggest tournaments in the world, like Karen Khachanov last week in Paris Masters, like Borna Coric making final of another Shanghai Masters 1000s and beating Federer in the final of Halle, and yet still you have Novak Djokovic and Rafa Nadal and Roger Federer at the top of the game. We hope that Stan and Andy will come back to top of the game as well. So generally there's this point at the moment of the sport which is so exciting, and there's so much happening in the game that this is just one piece of it, but we're very excited that we're here in Milan and we're able to showcase a slightly unique, different part of the sport compared to what people are used to. Well, I was never as good, that's for starters, but if I was at a higher level, I think this is a great platform for these guys, because not only does it give them awareness of themselves and their personality and being able to share their experiences around the world, but also prepares them for what's to come, we hope. So when you actually look at the players last year and how successful they've been in 2018, we hope and we think and we've been told that by themselves that actually it was a great platform being promoted for the whole year. And that's what this event is. It's not just about these 5 days in Milan. It's a promotion for them being made aware the whole year, so that when they then burst onto the scenes, which inevitably they will, because so often, you know, the junior players 18 and under become very strong players at the age of 21 or 22 or 23. And right now, we are catching them right before or whilst they're at the top of the game. So we think that it's a whole year-long promotion. For Rublev, it's been 2-year-long promotion because he was a year young last year. And it's been ultimately, you know, this is like the climax of a promotion where ultimately it just showcases them in such a strong way. So for them, I think it's a huge platform for them, and it prepares them very well for players like Chung to go on and play on Rod Laver Arena in Australia, make semi-final, then quarter-final of the two Masters 1000 in Indian Wells and Miami. For Khachanov to be naturally used to these huge occasions because he's played on this big stage where the whole world is watching. And the same with all the players that we've mentioned already. Daniil Medvedev, another player who's finished top 16 in the world, top 20 in the world this year, having won, beaten the Shikori in Japan. You know, that's a phenomenal win in straight sets. So there's some players that have really stepped up, and we think that we hope that we were part of the reason last year, and we really think that it's a great platform for these players to be able to showcase themselves and their personality in a slightly different way than the run-of-the-mill usual tournaments week in, week out. I think that actually ousting, if you can call it that, the current top of the generation crop, which have been so dominant in the sport, if you actually look at the wider group, not only the Federer, Nadal, Djokovic, Murray, Wawrinka, but you look at the Nishikoris, Dimitrovs, Raonic's, Goffins, Chilic's, Berdych's, Tsonga's, Lopez, Bautista. I mean, I've named 10, 11 names there, but they're very difficult to dismantle at the top of the game, and it takes a lot. And right now, the thing that I find so seamless is how we've welcomed in the Chorich's, Medvedev's, Khachanov's, Shapovalov's, Zverev's seamlessly. And unfortunately for a couple of players that have been injured, they've almost been emerged out of the game, whether it's Tsonga or Berdych or Del Potro for a couple of years. And now we've got Del Potro back coming now. Monfils made a bit of a run at the end of the year. Nishikori's back at the top of the game. Isner's now forced his way into the top 10. So change is happening without anyone really knowing it, and certainly no one's complaining. Everyone's loving it and everyone's being very excited by it. So that's what's so exciting for me at the ATP, that almost seamlessly it's changing and people are warming to it so well, when there was such a fear before of, well, we've had the same eight players do well, which drove the sport in such a strong way. But now change seems to be happening and everyone seems to be welcoming it in such a positive mindset, and it's been great for the sport. So no one could have really predicted that, because no one predicted the boom that happened in the sport and that is happening in the sport. But I think now it's happening, everyone's welcoming it.
So that's it, Gary. We're done. Drop Shot, the series, the podcast series, the magnificent series of six, it's over. I feel so sad it's over.
But it's not.
Why?
We're going into a tiebreak. We've still got episodes to do.
What do you mean?
Well, this is chapter six.
Yeah.
The changing of the guard.
Yeah.
We've still got chapter seven to come.
How can we have seven when it was a series of six?
The old gen. Remember, we spoke to the likes of Tim Henman, Mark Philippoussis, Thomas Enqvist, Tommy Haas about their experience of being players and what they think of this next generation.
Oh, yeah. I forgot. Oh, yeah.
And that is our next episode.
No, that's
And we still
true.
Have three episodes coming after that.
What?
Yeah, well, we'll talk about them in Chapter 7, but we've still got more to come.
Oh, you're so forward-thinking, Gary. You keep me on my toes.
So go on, sign off.
Okay, well, it's goodbye for now. But we'll be back with Drop Shot. Drop Shot is written and produced by Gary Hayes and me, Kerry Levy. Audio editing and sound mixing by Sounds Like These. Special thanks to Ollie Slack and Taylor Hayes. Music for this episode was composed by Jimmy Goodwin. Our thanks go out to Mark Epps and Edward LaCava from the ATP. We would also like to thank Maritza Georgitsis, Maylene Ramey, Ross Sattar and John Horn. Find us on Instagram and Twitter at This Is Drop Shot. This has been a PML Studio production.
If you've enjoyed this episode of Drop Shot, leave a review, tell a friend, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.